It's November 14th, 2013. This is The Hell Yeah Show. Hello, welcome to The Hell Yeah Show. I'm Alex.
I'm Emery.
And we are bringing you best practices for fine living, advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. Emery.
The FBI has not been here.
It's true. We have not yet been visited by the FBI.
That was so funny. Like, the all these companies now that are surely being inundated with queries as to how many requests for information that they've handed over to people, or if they've been the target of NSA investigations and everything. And then on, what was it? Remember the 5th of November, Apple released their transparency document, which I thought was hilariously well-timed. But it was actually a really interesting report. They go out of their way to be as forthcoming as possible, given the circumstances, and also kind of give the finger to the fact that they can't actually give the real statistics.
Right.
I thought it was pretty great. There's a good write-up on Quartz about what was in the document, and more importantly, what was not in the document, some of the information in general. And I thought, looking at the one, and the one that Google had out, I think today, was outstanding also with the redaction, which I thought was just brilliant and super snarky. So I like that. But every time I was hearing about Merkel in Germany and, like, the, you know, the outrage that they were spying on Germans, Germany issues a lot of requests for someone who's feigning, you know, being so distraught over it. So I was a little, I found that a little amusing. But do you remember on the last show we were talking about getting a wagon?
Radio flyer wagon. Yeah.
Yeah. I finally finished putting it together. It's awesome. And my kid loves it. Like, she's kind of bananas for it. Like, the evening that I put it all up and assembled the little bugger, it's definitely a pretty posh wagon. It has it's either a flat wagon, and then you can also open it up so, like, these two seats open up into seat backs, and there's, like, a little safety belt. And because, you know, like we say in our house, anything worth doing requires a helmet or buckles. And there's cup holders.
Because the kid needs to have their
daddy's got a beer,
their big gulp. Yeah.
Here, hold daddy's beer. We wound up taking it out for a spin. We went to the park, and she had a blast, and she thought it was kind of amazing. But the night that I brought it up, like, she just wanted to sit in it. So she got up in there, and then she was, like, sitting in the wagon and, like, was all happy and, like, clapping. And then she'd want us to, like, bring her stuffed animals. So it was basically her and, like, half a dozen animals. She had Tigger, she had Eeyore, she had Panda, she had her kitty. Panda's name is Panda.
Okay.
But she actually...
That makes sense.
Yeah, she says Dada. Like Panda, and then she'll point out.
I think that means dad.
No. That's yeah. Daddy.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. And then she says kitty for when she wants her little tiny stuffed kitten that we named Pinot Meow. And then let me think. Eeyore, Tigger, Sheriff Cow was one of her when she was really young. She's not really into Sheriff Cow anymore, which we think is a cow. But anyways, it has, like, a sheriff's badge on it. So
this is already the population of this wagon is.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then my ugly doll Trey was also in the wagon. So she had a pretty full entourage going on. But then when we were going to the park, I've got video footage from the ride out and while we were playing around, and then when we came back. But I haven't finished putting it into, like, a succinct enough video that people would actually want to watch. But like, she would want to stop the wagon, and then she wanted us to, like, pick up leaves and put them in her hair. And then, it was a lot of fun. And I'm really happy that I picked it up. So it's been kind of a blast.
All right. You know, because I keep telling you that I the plastic part, or the fact that it is plastic, I'm a little skeptical of. But
look, have I ever given you a hard time about having a trampoline room?
No, you've been so supportive of my trampoline purchasing.
Yeah. Gosh, and then last week, I think, and then did you were able to recover your Halloween bowl, right?
Oh yes, yeah. The update from last week when I left the bowl of candy sitting outside my door, the bowl was not taken, so that's good. And I'm not convinced that any of the candy was taken either.
Well, they probably just thought it was like full of razor blades. It was an unattended bowl of candy.
Clearly, no. I think the real problem is that my front door is not in any street visible place. So someone would actually have to come in the driveway area to see that there was a bowl of candy there. So.
And they got to step over, like...
And they got to go get past the minefield and get over the electric fence. And
the razor wire. The oil slick and the smoke screen, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Hunter out there. And I think I had a... our Halloween was pretty tame. And then, there was a... There was something really good that I can't even remember now. Oh, I got to watch The Great Pumpkin for the first time with my kid.
Wow.
She wouldn't have known that it was even on last year, but this year she was pretty into it. It was a good time. And then there's this TV show, and I know you're totally gonna like make fun of me for being an old.
I was already making fun of you before the show.
This won't help. I think I'm the only person that watches The Mentalist, or I did until I said something about it, because there wasn't a new episode last week, and there was kind of a cliffhanger in the previous one, so I was like really looking forward to it, and then there wasn't one, and so I was pretty much raging on Sunday night, and then I didn't see anybody else even notice.
No, I'm aware that there's a show called The Mentalist, but...
It's a pretty good show. It's not, it's not amazing, but it's pretty good. I like it. I'm kind of hooked. And I don't know if it's just because I put in some time and got acquainted, but I mean, it's certainly no Good Wife. Do you watch Good Wife?
No.
That's a great show.
I heard.
This season of The Good Wife in particular is outstanding because there's this side plot with NSA surveillance team.
Oh, wow. That's timely.
Oh, yeah. And they're doing a really great job with it, too. Their depiction of the NSA analysts are that they are like, high-fiving Cheetos throwing nerds that just like hang out all day and like listen to people's phone call. It's absolutely hilarious. There's like these two total, like they're absolutely bros. So there's two bros and like, you know, reporting to a colonel. and it's pretty great. It's a good show. You should check it out. I was really skeptical and resistant. Liz was watching it all the time and she liked it a lot. And I was kind of meh. You know, I wasn't really too into it. But then when I started watching it, I couldn't stop. So it's a good show. But this week's American Horror Story was pretty great. It was a little disconnected, I thought. But that's still a good show. And so far this season is making up for last season being kind of weak. But in political news...
In non-fictional political news.
In non-fictional political news. There was a... that's a very good distinction. barely. So the town I live in, there's a neighboring town, and they had some big important elections. And the reason that they had this important election was because they had a couple of city council seats and a mayor seat that was in contention. And so Americans for Prosperity, the Koch brothers, started funneling a metric ass load of money into this campaign. And
wait, for a local city council
seat? Yes.
Wow, that's weird. Okay.
Well, see, here's the thing. And this is one part me being a conspiracy nut and two parts just having a general political rage level. So one of the things that's going on in our state right now, which is Iowa, we have one of our senators is retiring next term. And what I think is happening is that there's a concerted effort to like build strongholds for redistricting so that they can try to ensure other candidates get picked for things. And so stepping down to like city council and mayoral races and things like that, sounds a little silly, and it is. But they were definitely doing it anyway. And there were some really like just, some of the quotes from this guy, like the local dude that was kind of running the money train for this, it was just such a smug D-bag. I couldn't even handle it. Like, he was saying, basically, like, people were saying, well, how much money are we spending? And he's like, well, I don't know. You know, I'll tell you one thing. Like, we're definitely not going to be outspent. And, like, just swinging his junk around wherever he could. And And I think like this whole thing with like the Citizens United ruling and like all of these super PACs that are able to like dump just so much cash into elections is just ridiculous. And the way that they like manipulate the rules so that they don't have to disclose donors or amounts or anything. Like technically Americans for Prosperity is not a political organization. It's a social welfare organization, which I think is hilarious that a conservative group is, you know, operating as a welfare. Like, you would think that they would just be so opposed to that idea. But the really, really dizzyingly bizarre part of this is that because they qualify as a social welfare organization, that as long as they are doing negative campaigning against a candidate, then they don't have to disclose anything.
Huh.
So they don't say like vote for so-and-so, they say don't vote for this guy. So
weird.
It's super, super sketchy, and it's absolutely infuriating. But I was so happy to see that they completely, I call it coke blocking. they were able to basically not have to swap out any of the people that they were targeting. So I was definitely happy about that.
So you mean basically their spending was ineffective?
Well, I don't know if it was ineffective entirely. I mean, they certainly had a lot of attention and people were talking about it. Really high turnout, which is good. And I don't even remember if it was close even, but, you know, part of it's like for me, the things that were really bothering me about this was, first of all, like obviously I'm not in step with their politics, but I really resent billionaires. I really resent two guys. I don't resent billionaires. I resent these two billionaires astroturfing an entire political movement in an attempt to make themselves better off. Like they don't know anything about this place. Like they have nothing to do with this part of the country, this part of the state. Like they're just trying to manipulate elections. And I think that that's really terrifying. Like
it didn't work.
It did not work this time.
Yeah.
But it has worked in other places. So
I guess.
I mean, it's just very, look at like Ted Cruz's district. Like the only reason that he's there is because they were able to successfully gerrymander that place. Like the way that they've been able to get people into Congress that are not really interested in being congressional is that, you know, they don't have to worry about, there's no contention. Like they don't have to worry about competition in their own districts. Like they don't have to appeal to anybody except for this really fringe side. So I was really relieved. And then our own town city council, I'm pretty optimistic too. We had some pretty good turnout for that. There's like a little tiny town that's like its own little incorporated town, like in the middle of my city. And they said that they had like 80% participation in the election.
Wow.
Which isn't hard to do
in a tiny town.
They have a few hundred people that live in that town, but that is an outstanding participation. Like if we could actually, what do we get, like 5% like in national elections, like I think we would have a little bit more optimism if we had some confidence in it. But I was pretty happy about that though. I don't know if did you guys have any exciting elections going on? I know it's like off season for it, but
yeah, I not that I know of. And you know, given that I'm such an avid follower of the local city council, you'd think I would know about these things.
Exactly. You're glued to public access.
Yeah, well, the problem is I'm a Palo Alto City Council follower and I live in Mountain View now, so
got it.
I don't actually get to vote for
Well, does Mountain View even have elections? I mean, they're a duchy, right?
Isn't it
like a birth by or a secession by birth?
I think at this point it's whoever I think the shareholders in Google actually vote for the local city council or something. I have no idea. I did not get a ballot, so I'm assuming nothing happened.
I saw some interesting chatter on the Twitter machine today. You know how we do like our show notes in Google Docs?
Yep.
Of course you do.
I'm staring at them right now.
Yeah. Apparently, the Apple iWork stuff, they're adding like some real time collaboration stuff, and I don't know if it's like rolling out right now or if it's actually already live or what. But I've been pretty impressed with that so far. Like the I really like Google Docs. It's very approachable. It's easy to use. But the one thing that I really like about iWork is kind of the polish on the desktop and iOS and the web. Like in terms of they're all kind of. And this has been a criticism, right? Like after Mavericks and iOS 7, they had this big push where they started giving away iWorks, and there's new versions of the iWork suite. So like Numbers and Pages and Keynote all got new versions, and there's some there's a feature gap, right? Like they actually lost some capability from the older version, and a lot of people were really upset about that. And Apple said that they're working to address that and that they plan to bump it back up, but. The one thing that I do like about it so much is that they're, and we were talking about this before the show, like Apple doesn't have a great history with web services and applications like that.
Right.
But the one thing that they're really nailing on iWork, from my perspective, is the consistency and the how unified the desktop, iOS, and the web are. Like there is feature parity on those applications.
Well, there are edits you can make in the desktop version that you can't make in the iOS version, though, right?
I don't think so.
Like, aren't there like certain control panels and adjustments and things that?
No, have you seen the new version of like Pages?
No, I haven't tried it.
Okay, so there it's kind of a it looks.
Oh, is that what you mean by roll? Like they rolled back features on the desktop, so
yes.
That now it's at complete parity.
Yes.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
Some people are really tweaked about this, which is understandable, I guess.
Well, because it's like dumbing down the desktop version. In favor of
but you know, there's been such a large trend anyways in like very minimal purpose-built software lately that I don't think it's out of, like, when people were like had this this is an outrage, like, okay, when Macintosh readers
there of course
go.
This is where this is coming from.
So these guys and Camp Neckbeard were just losing their minds about some of this. Like there were some people there that were just just could not believe that this was happening to them, right? Like, this is the worst thing in the world. And these are the same people that are like still pissed that they don't have Rosetta in OS 10 because they have like a, they bought a $20 shareware app 8 years ago that ran on their Power Mac G4, and they are furious that they can't run that on a machine that was produced in the last decade. So this is the same crowd that was like really raging about it. Cause I mean, from my perspective, like most of the software I've bought in the last couple of years is absolutely less. There's so much less overhead to them, and there's so much less in them. And that's part of the reason that I like them so much, is that the software becomes more approachable. It becomes more natural and easier to use. And the stuff that they do really well. So, I mean, I don't miss any of the things that are gone now in Numbers and Pages and Keynote because I never use them anyway. Like, I didn't care. Like, so there's so much of those apps. I mean, and they're applications that I use all the time. Like, that software I actually use is the iWork suite. And I don't miss a thing. Like, I write documents and documentation, and I write proposals, and I write all sorts of stuff in Pages that, yeah, I never used anything that's like, I don't miss a thing, but there are people that do. So yeah, I'm excited to see that. And then I ran into one of my coworkers at the grocery store, like this is like a month ago or something. And we started talking about fantasy football somehow.
Oh boy.
And then it reminded me, like, we kind of had this like brief tangent where we kind of came up with this idea that it would be great if there was like a way that people that are not interested in football, like myself, could have a fantasy team, but it should be like TV show characters or video game characters. But the TV show thing I thought was really great because it reminded me of this game that Liz and I made up in the last season that 24 aired. We called it Damn It with Jack Bauer. And it was a 24 drinking game. So, for example, anyone that watches the show 24 will appreciate this, but other people won't. Anytime someone says, put it on my screen, for example, that was a drinkable line. If Jack Bauer yelled "Damn it!" and like into the camera, like that was always a a good one. If we saw him charging a cell phone, that was a three drink.
Wait, that
It never.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, yeah, that happened.
No, you never had to charge that thing. The Motorola Razr never needs a charge.
Of course,
it's powered by freedom.
Yeah.
What else was there?
It's possible he was just swapping out phones constantly.
Yeah, that's true too. They're all burners. He was just walking to 7-Eleven and buying them. Yeah. We had this game and it was a lot of fun. And then this was a great idea where we were thinking like we could kind of do like a Cards Against Humanity crowdsourcing thing. And the goal would be that you could watch a TV show with your friends and something would happen on the show. And there'd be some sort of scoring, so closer to fantasy football than a drinking game, because we don't want to encourage drinking. It's, you know, it's a terrible thing. but you could if you wanted to. But there's so much like older television shows that people have never seen before now, and they're available on things like Hulu and Amazon and Netflix, right? So, for example, The Love Boat. I know nothing about The Love Boat, but I would probably watch it if it was turned into a fun game.
Well, this so for some amount of time, I forget what some network was showing Pop Up Brady, which was episodes of the Brady Bunch.
Yeah,
but they would pop up annotations over the episodes,
like pop up videos on VH1.
Yeah, yeah. It was. I mean, it, like the pop-ups would be like, "This is fake grass." Or,
you know? Yeah, that's kind of cool.
And like, yeah, just like weird little, you know, hey, don't you notice this weird thing that's happening in this scene that, you know, like clearly is, you know, that you wouldn't have noticed otherwise, but that when you see it, you can't unsee it, you know?
Yeah, that kind of thing would be great. I'm looking for something a little bit less requiring programming on the television network side. But like, and it's so difficult to come up with because you have to have like a draft, right? So there's a couple shows that I think I'm actually equipped to go into some examples with on this, and one would be Seinfeld. So with Seinfeld, yeah, for example, if you did like a draft round, you would earn points every time, for example, Kramer bursts into a room, like just opens the door and slides in, right?
That would be kind of great because then you'd be sitting there and he does that and you'd cheer.
It's like a touchdown. Right? I mean, touchdown, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or, what is it, a touchdown or a home run in football? I don't even know. No, I'm just kidding.
I believe it's a
grand slam. Is that what that is?
A goal.
A goal. Okay. A field goal. Yeah. And then like, you know, Elaine shoves somebody and says, get out. You know, there's a bunch of, or hello, Newman.
Yep.
And so that there could be like, you know, first tier cast members and then second tier, and then kind of build a little team. And then as you're watching the show and you pick an episode at random or however you want to do it one by one. And, as things happen, you get points, and then at the end, we'll see what happens. So I kind of like this idea, and I'm still fleshing it out. So, to our dozens of listeners, if you have any contributions or thoughts on the matter, or would like to participate in any way, you should contact us, and you know how. It's on our website, show.hellyeah.com, or hellyeahshow at Twitter, or hellyeah on app.net, or the Hell Yeah Show Google Plus page. Just drop a line. If you have any suggestions or ideas, I'd love to hear them. It'll be a motivating factor for me to actually do something with this idea rather than letting it just sit on an index card like the hundreds of others. So this, I think, could be a lot of fun. And we're coming into the holidays, which Thanksgiving last year was the first time I ever played Cards Against Humanity. And that whole model and the way that they do that, I think, is great. And I think it could really work for something like this. I need a feedback loop of some sort to kind of help figure out what to do with it. So what do you think?
Speaking of Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw they had an expansion pack, right?
I think the last expansion they did was 3. And then they did the big black box, which was just literally a box that you could put all your expansions together.
Was it even black?
Yeah, I believe it was.
Why's it gotta be a black box?
I don't know. That's just them. So I got an email this morning from Cards Against Humanity. And when you get an email from Cards Against Humanity, you best open it immediately.
Sure.
Because it's usually something like, here's this new expansion that is going to sell out within hours or minutes.
Yeah.
And you need to get on that.
And the time it takes you to click this link on Amazon is already gone.
Yeah, exactly. So in this case, it was Cards Against Humanity Holiday BS. Which is, I think, something they've done before. At least I've heard of it before. But I forgot what it was, and I clicked through. It is so it's at this point it is sold out, of course. Mm-hmm. But it is a program whereby you pay them $12.
Oh,
yes, that's the best part. And then starting in early December, they send you 12 gifts over the course of the month.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, I'm, of course, random and ridiculous and, you know, whatever, like nonsensical gifts, from what I understand, although who knows, you know. But basically, they're going to mail me 12 gifts over the course of December, which is a great deal for $12, really.
Sure.
I mean, they are likely losing money on it, depending on how heavy the gifts are. I don't know.
Fascinating.
Even if the gifts are not expensive, you know, shipping is going to be something. So yeah, I mean, it's more just they want to do a crazy thing. So they had 100,000 spots this year, and it sold out within I'd say like 4 hours or so, maybe five, something like
that.
Oh
wow.
So yeah, I opened it on my phone in bed in the morning, like checking email, and immediately rushed to complete the transaction. So that's, I'm looking forward to that. We'll see what I get. But it's a pretty cool idea.
That's really cool. I like that.
Yeah.
Those are clever guys.
Oh yeah. They totally, and just the, their devotion to, not exploiting their brand and popularity, for pure financial gain. I mean, like, clearly they're probably making a significant amount of money selling Cards Against Humanity.
But they also let you make your own card. Like, everything's freely available. Yeah,
exactly. They let you make your own cards. Like, the Cards Against Humanity sets themselves are very reasonably priced. I mean, of course, it's just, they're paper cards, so it's not like the costs are incredibly high, but to manufacture them. But, you know, those sets sell for like $20.
Yeah.
And then this, that's just kind of this crazy thing. I'm like, yeah, well, thought we'd do this. So, yeah, really, really cool. Anyway, so that is happening. I'll report back. The other thing that has been happening is, I have been exercising my combination of Jekyll, Bootstrap 3, GitHub, and App Engine.
Oh.
Over the past week and a half or so.
Now, I got a very appreciative IM from you the other day about RVM.
Yes.
the Ruby version manager, which I am pleased to hear that you appreciated. Isn't it awesome?
Yeah. It's excellent. I mean, it was, so I was doing all this work on a machine that started by not having the right version of Ruby. And so from scratch, I just went immediately to RVM. And the process of getting the right version of Ruby running was incredibly straightforward. It was really fantastic. So.
Yeah. It's pretty great. And then you don't have to worry about like software updates to the OS and vendor supplied stuff like blowing up everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So some things I will say from this process. I mean, Jekyll continues to be fantastic. I really like it a lot. And for those who haven't caught our previous discussions, Jekyll is basically like a static site generating framework.
It's a very it's not something that casual I want to blog people will like. It requires more intervention than other options, but it definitely generates fantastic websites that are very quick and can be deployed easily in very simple environments.
Yep, exactly. Bootstrap, of course, is a sort of set of styles for creating responsive websites. Bootstrap was actually nice to work with. It can be a little constraining.
Is this Twitter Bootstrap?
This is Bootstrap 3, which I believe is based on, is sort of like, I guess it's become its own thing that is divorced from the Twitter name at this point.
Huh.
But I mean, it's the same, I think it's the same core, stuff. So, and then, GitHub, I had not used pull requests on, or not, you know, managed a significant number of pull requests before on GitHub, but was really impressed by how seamless that whole process is. And additionally, the GitHub issues tracker for tracking, I mean, it's essentially a bug tracker, but it's a really lightweight one that has a pretty minimal set of features that is more or less exactly what you need and nothing more. except it doesn't have search, so you can't actually search through your bugs, which kind of sucks. But other than that, GitHub Issues is actually a really nice, lightweight way to track open issues with a site or a project. Mm. Yep. And then App Engine is App Engine.
That's the Google App Engine thing?
That is, yeah, Google App Engine. Really, like, great software package for Mac. You download, install, and sets up your local environment precisely mirror an App Engine server. Easy to deploy, all that sort of stuff. It was easy to work with, and at the end of the day, we deployed a website for the Dart web scripting language.
Hmm.
Dartlang.org.
What is that?
Read about it. It is, I mean, it. The pitch for it is basically JavaScript was not built for modern web app engineering, and Dart is. So
is Dart similar to, like, Node?
It's I don't know Node that well. I mean, Dart basically brings you can have strong typing, you can have package management. It compiles to JavaScript, so it is compatible with all browsers currently.
Alan, pretend I don't have a computer science degree from a prestigious West Coast university.
an easy way to say this would be Dart works a lot. Dart has a lot of the benefits of Java that aren't present in JavaScript.
Like exploit code.
Yeah. Okay. Java and other similar languages that are not web languages. It takes those benefits and makes them available in a web language.
Okay.
A web scripting language.
Great.
So, anyway, but so my this was kind of a weird side project, but I was involved in launching the website for that, which involved all this the Jekyll Bootstrap, GitHub, and App Engine, and it kind of makes me want to go back and revisit some of the sites I've already built in Jekyll and apply the Bootstrap styles to them, because that responsive stuff is real nice.
Yeah, well, I mean, I use on incumbent.org, I use Jekyll, and I use a really nice responsive layout on that, but it's not based on Bootstrap or Twitter to Bootstrap. It's, well, I mean, it kind of is, but it isn't. But similar principles, at least, and I love having a site. Like, my most important thing on a web page these days is that it has to be readable on an iPhone and an iPad and a desktop.
Yep.
And that's pretty much all I care about.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I will say, I mean, the one thing I don't like about responsive design is like, it seems like it should be possible to design a site that is readable on all those devices without doing all the crazy, you know, basically rearranging the entire structure of the page depending upon the device width.
Yeah, that part of it where you're basically like sniffing to see how big the display is. Now, the good thing is that people that use kits and frameworks like Bootstrap, a lot of that is kind of removed. You don't have to like figure all that stuff out, but it's all there. Right. I mean, you can see it in the style sheets that are being used, but it is kind of odd that that's the way that they have to do it. But at the same time, it doesn't feel rickety. You know what I mean? Like, I never get the impression, at least, that it's like a hack.
Yeah, no. I mean, it is. I mean, it's a massive pile of hacks on top of JavaScript and CSS that fortunately abstract away a lot of the nasty stuff.
But it doesn't feel like, you know, it's the kind of like, so I have this habit of like doing really thrashy, poorly documented hacks on things when I'm in a hurry and when I'm in a bind, and then someone else sometimes gets to, and I should clarify that I don't do this like professionally. This would be on things that I'm not super serious about, or maybe that's even worse. I've had a friend of the show, John Duxta, has like on a couple of occasions come across really bizarre things that I've done to make something work when we had Autobahn up. Speaking of, I have an Xserve that has, hold on a second, and I'm sorry for this brief diversion, but this is important. I want to tell you, I have a web server that has been up and running without a reboot for 1,681 days.
Wow.
It's a G5 Xserve. Running a version of OS 10 server that I don't want to tell you. But it can't be updated. Like, there's no, it's at the end of the road.
This is like, this is the server that you want to stick on the island for people to discover in hundreds of years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah. I'm at this point, I don't want to even reboot it because I'm afraid the drives will seize the moment that the power gets turned off. I mean, it's got to be just full of metal shavings at this point. But yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. Once I passed the odometer on the 1600, I was like, that's awesome. But anyways.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. Okay, and then also in recent things, Ender's Game, the movie. I saw it. I had not read the book. Yes. I was legitimately surprised by the plot twist.
I don't know. I don't know.
You haven't read or seen it?
No, and I hate Orson Scott Card. I think he's overrated. Yeah,
I don't think anyone likes him as a person.
Oh, sure they do. He's worse than Ayn Rand, in my opinion. Like, the people that really like Ender's Game are worse than the people that like Fountainhead.
I saw the movie. The movie, I found it an enjoyable experience. I did not find it a particularly profound experience. But it was pleasant to watch. So there's that.
Han Solo.
He is. Mm-hmm. Old Harrison Ford is pretty badass.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah.
Did he shoot anybody?
Trying to think. I don't believe he did. No.
No. He always shoots first.
Yeah. No. He's mostly just he's a sort of a mentor figure. He does well.
So. Right on. Yeah, he hasn't done many bad movies other than Firewall.
I have not seen Firewall.
You should not.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a bad
movie. Cool. And then the other really crazy thing that is happening right now is that a PlayStation 4
yes.
has been shipped from an Amazon warehouse. It's on its way. It'll be here tomorrow.
Sweet. You're taking the day off?
Yep. I'm not taking the day off, no, but may leave a little early just to make sure that I can pick up the package from the UPS store in time.
Yeah, so, well, you gotta, you know, I figured you'd have Sony fever tomorrow. call him sick. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so really glad I pre-ordered. Apparently they're looking pretty hard to come by. Although people are going out and lining up. So
I haven't been in a huge hurry. I definitely think I'll be getting one at some point soon, but I don't know how soon, and I'm not super motivated because I'm still playing The Last of Us and I'm loving it. Yeah.
That's a good argument. but yeah, and then in the meantime, weirdly, I've kind of gotten back into the Wii U.
That is weird.
It is kind of weird. Weirdly, at this point, there are actually a significant number of pretty good games available on the Wii U, and the system itself it seems kind of cool. There's a lot of weird cool stuff going on with it. Nintendo just recently released Wii Sports Club, which is basically just the Wii Sports game that came out with the original Wii, but you know, upgraded a bit, and then it includes online multiplayer, which is brilliantly done. So when you get into a match with someone else, the two games right now are tennis and bowling. And when you get into a match with someone else, there's no voice chat, there's no text chat, there's no like direct communication, but you can send like pictograms and short messages. You can preset three of them on your D-pad, and then you can press one of those three, and it shows up on the screen during certain points in the match. So, like, someone bowls and gets a strike, you can show the picture you drew of a strike or whatever. Or, you know,
I like that a lot better than when I'm playing The Last of Us and someone shoots me in the head and then teabags me.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So the crazy thing about this is Nintendo is manually reviewing all of these messages.
You're kidding
before
me.
Before you can use them in online matches.
That's ridiculous.
It's, I mean, their devotion to creating a safe, clean,
fun
community is insane. So yeah, it is amazing. Like, you go into these matches and people are encouraging of each other, and you know, like, you know, occasionally there's like fun competitive jabs at each other, but it's, you know, never mean spirited. No one is abusing each other like in all other you know, online multiplayer stuff. Yeah, it's kind of, it kind of blows my mind. Pretty impressive. So
yeah, that's really great.
Yep. Cool. All right, so on to some news. You were very excited about this the other day.
Yeah, I think this is amazing. So Amazon Web Services, they have a lot of services. They use storage stuff, like with S3 and Glacier, which I use quite a bit. And in fact, I think I just checked the other day, I have like 160 gigs of stuff on Amazon Glacier that's backed up. And they're mostly photos and home movies and stuff, like things that I would really actually be upset if I lost.
Sure.
And that costs me like a whopping $4 a month. My S3 storage is a little bit less than that, but more expensive. But it's also more available. But yeah, I really like their services a lot. I think they're pretty great for what I do with them. I mean, there's a lot of things I probably wouldn't opt for there, but when it comes to like just having a small server instance and storage stuff, I'm really happy with it. Admittedly, like some of the stuff that they do, I've never used, so I can't even really say. But they have this new thing now. I've always wondered about this. I like the idea of having a remote, virtual, manageable desktop machine. And they've just released a new service called Workspaces in conjunction with AppStream. But the Workspaces thing in particular, I thought was outstanding because it's basically a remote Windows desktop to a essentially like a little private instance that's carved out for you with RAM and storage, a lot of storage actually. And I want to say they start at like $30 a month, was it? Something like that. But
that sounds. So there was a similar service from OnLive, and it was actually much cheaper than that. It was, I think, under $10 a month.
Yeah, but they also weren't paying any licenses.
Well, so they should have. I would imagine OnLive was paying
for Windows
server licenses.
No, that's why they got in trouble.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Well, there was a big dispute because Microsoft was saying there's no way that you actually have licenses for all of these sessions that you're selling. And they said, oh, sure, we do.
Right.
It's over here under this $50 bill. Like, there was this whole like weird back and forth thing. And I don't know whatever happened with that, but it wasn't good.
Yeah. No, Windows Server licenses are expensive.
Yeah, they're not cheap. Yeah. So it's a Windows 7 desktop experience, which I'm not super pleased with, but that's mainly because they're using Windows Server 2008, I think, which does the Windows 7 experience. But I really think this is a great idea, and I don't know if it's so great for like, you know, home users because it's $40 a month or whatever, but I think it's a great option for having a desktop environment that's somewhat flexible for you.
And they have tablet apps too that you can use to interact with it, right?
And they use something different than native RDP. They're using this like PC over IP thing, which is supposed to deliver really good performance. So what I'm actually thinking about something like this for would be for what I do, having like a really well, rigorously managed, secure environment that people can connect to remotely and then do very sensitive stuff that they don't normally get to do or shouldn't be doing from just about anywhere that that you would suspect that people are logging in remotely to do stuff. So you have kind of like a little bit better control there. You have some patch management capability there. It's actually
you're saying like create one of these, go install some questionable software, like, you know, potentially virus containing software on it, see what happens type of
stuff? No, because I mean that's easier to do on a local VM. Because you have like snapshotting and it's local and it's quicker. But for like payment processing stuff, for example, like I'm interested in it as a possible solution for terminals, basically for point of sale type stuff. And I know that sounds kind of goofy, but this particular setup and the way that they're delivering the service, it looks like it would be a really good fit for that sort of thing. And if you are like you know, if you have like a bunch of developers working on something, it's a great way to have some control over what's happening with your stuff and to manage those machines that are essentially operated by telecommuters. You know, like if you're using contractors or people from all over the world, And you need to make sure that everybody has the right set of tools, the same software, the same code repositories. And you don't want to like deal with multiple access lists and things like that that you normally would have to. This is a great way to kind of funnel all of that into one place. And I think it's really cool. And I think, you know, from a management perspective, I think there's the cost is prohibitive at this point. But like, I think like there's people in my family that I would love to be able to like take their computer and just set it on fire and hand them an iPad and say, this is your Windows PC now. Like, just use this and you still have all of your normal stuff. You can run your rickety software for XP that you bought 18 years ago. And
yeah.
And then when something happens, I can very easily address it or what have you.
How are they going to plug their camera in though?
Well, that's a bad example because you can actually plug a camera into an iPad.
Yeah, that's true.
But, so yeah, I think I'm really curious to see what happens here. There's a lot of like enterprise customers that currently use things like Terminal Services and Citrix to deliver applications, and it's entirely possible that this is the price point where it becomes a lot more sensible for them to just hand this over to Amazon. I think this is a really exciting thing that they're doing, and I'm really I'm really curious about it. And hopefully, I'll get some more information about it soon. I did sign up for the like a trial demo thing. I asked for like 4 desktops and we'll see what happens.
Cool.
Mainly just for people in my office. And so we can kind of kick the tires and see how it works. But I thought this was like a really cool idea. I like also the idea of a, the other benefit to this is that there's kind of like this model where people assume that like a remote machine, especially a virtual one, is not that powerful and it's not capable of doing the same things. But in this particular example, you're getting a machine with like 4 gigs of RAM and like 3 gigahertz processor allocation and 50 gigs of storage or whatever. Like that's not a trivial resource. And there's, you know, there's people that, and again, this is like my family situation where there's people in my family that don't have computers that reasonable.
Sure.
So in this case, it would actually be an upgrade for them, but you know, the cost would be
I'm guessing there will be a gap on the graphics side. I doubt they are dedicating graphics resources, significant graphics resources to these things.
I don't know. Cause I mean, like, I don't know how the PC over IP stuff works and I don't know if it uses any GPU acceleration and I don't know. There's too many unknowns there, but I mean, it's possible that, I mean, for like desktop applications and things like office automation running Outlook and Word and Excel and Photoshop and stuff like that. Like, I don't think it would really hurt you.
Yeah, it will probably be sufficient.
It would not be well suited. I will say it probably will not be well suited for like, you know, playing current generation PC games on it.
Yeah. Or any I don't know, maybe very old ones. I don't know. Depends on how well they've optimized the latency and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's just it. Like they claim that they have a very responsive setup for this, and we'll see what happens. I'm pretty psyched. Yeah.
Cool.
We have just under 10 minutes. Do you want to, we can skip some of the stuff in the next section here. The
mobile phone.
The dangerous stuff. We'll actually skip for another time because we should talk about BlizzCon. Because I totally forgot it was even happening.
It's pretty. I definitely saw a lot of people talking about it, but did not follow it as closely as I have in previous years.
So there's a new expansion coming for World of Warcraft, and it looks pretty good. Especially on the look side, people have often said that like the game is starting to look pretty dated, like the character models and things like that aren't that
I mean the art style is still fantastic, Yeah, there aren't that many polygons in those characters.
Yeah, and so that's one thing that they're changing, is they're bumping that up. They're making some UI changes to the interface, which will be very welcome. Gameplay-wise, they're doing some big, significant changes to how the content is played. So, like, the rating system is getting a tune-up. There's different tiers now and different ways that you can do cross-realm stuff, which is really cool. I like that a lot.
So Is this moving things more in the direction of pickup groups type stuff, or is this moving? I mean, I'd imagine like, you know, sort of impromptu raiding with strangers type stuff, or is this moving?
I think there's definitely more more on the way to make that a less gruesome and grisly experience for people. But okay. It's also, I think, you know, if I look at like when I was playing regularly, like it would be very convenient, I think, to be able to like trial people for a regular group before a server transfer. But I also think that they're kind of moving towards decentralization of things where like the individual server that you're on matters a lot less. Depending on what group you want to play with. So
yeah,
I think
cool.
I like that. So we'll see how that goes. The player versus player PvP content stuff looks really great. There's a new world PvP zone that's like pretty much persistent all the time. And there's like no caps on people that can be there. So it's not like any of the zones where you would zone in and then there was like a 40 to 40 cap. They have a much larger scale now. So that's pretty cool too. And when you get the expansion, if you're a returning player such as myself, you'll be pleased to hear that you can immediately jumpstart one of your toons to level 90. Which is,
that feels like
cheating. Yeah, a little bit, but you know, that's like the least intriguing and interesting part of the game to me. So I thought that was pretty slick. not that it really saved me a whole lot of time. I think I've already got several of the 85s that are just banked hanging out.
Sure.
But yeah, then their card game called Hearthstone, which is kind of like a Magic the Gathering, but simpler, but also played online. I think this is a great game.
I've really been meaning to check it out. I might do so after this
it's
show.
It's really good. We'll do it because then, well, maybe I'll bump into you sometime. But I've been playing it, and I think it's great. I've got actually a gameplay video on my website on Kvetch. There's a Vimeo of me playing my first human opponent. So you can kind of get a feel for how it plays. It's really a great game, and I like games like that, but I'm not living in my parents' basement, and I rarely get a chance to actually play them. So having this occur online on the computer is pretty handy. I think they've said that they're planning to bring it to the iPad. In my opinion, like they're really screwing that up. Like they should be launching on the iPad because it's seriously... It is a perfect match for that platform.
I have really, really enjoyed playing the Magic the Gathering games on the iPad.
They're great. They're really good games.
Yeah, works really well.
And, and this in particular is fantastic. And if you're a fan of any of the Blizzard franchises, I guess especially World of Warcraft, that's definitely where you want to be. It's a lot of fun. Super easy to learn. Not a lot of like the one thing I don't like about Magic is there's so many like gotchas and like the interrupt system and the instance and all that crap. Like there's none of that. Hearthstone.
Sure.
So it plays very, very smoothly, and it's not complicated. So,
cool.
They have an expansion for Diablo that we already knew about called Reaper of Souls. They had some more information about that. I didn't know they were getting rid of the actual full auction house in that game. I knew they were getting rid of the real money one, but they're actually ditching the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the real money auction house and the gold auction house are going bye-bye.
Wow.
And I guess the money one's probably already gone by now. But yeah, the I want to say it's April. I think it's in the spring where they're turning it off in March, maybe. But yeah, I think that's going to bring some of like the purists that were like super serious about Diablo. They'll be happy. I don't know how it'll affect you know, the more casual base like myself. That I mean, I played Diablo 3 a lot when my daughter was like a newborn because she just slept all the time, and I put her in I wore her on my chest, and like she napped for 2 hours, and I played my witch doctor. It was a lot of fun, but and then they have a new game that's coming out called Heroes of the Storm, and I think it's amazing looking. And
go ahead.
So my read on this is that it's basically the heroes of Warcraft and Starcraft and Diablo rolled into a Smash Brothers type beat 'em up where it's like a 4-on-4 PvP style game with objectives and things like that. And I think it looks great. Ben, you have like an opposing view to this.
Well, no. So, I mean, have you played Dota or League of Legends?
No. And I think League of Legends looks stupid.
Okay. Well, I mean, I watched a brief amount of gameplay footage from this. I've forgotten what it's called. Heroes of the Storm. There we go. It looks very much like Dota or Dota 2 specifically. I mean, Dota 2 is Valve's recent, you know, sequel made by some of the people who made the original Dota as a mod.
I never played those, so I don't know.
Warcraft. Yeah, so I mean, it looks like, I mean, it is within the genre of MOBA, or multiplayer online battle arena, I think is the term.
Wow. Is that industry or?
that's an industry term. And it's, I mean, it just, the art style, the art style of MOBA games, and specifically Dota, tends to be the Blizzard art style, even the one that Valve made, because it's all based on the original Dota, which was a Warcraft 3 mod.
Okay.
Or a Warcraft 3 multiplayer map. And the original Dota used a bunch of Warcraft characters, a bunch of like really random Warcraft characters. So as a result, these games tend to have a bunch of really random, crazy characters, some of which look suspiciously like, like water elementals from Warcraft and things like that. So having a Blizzard one is kind of just like this all coming full circle.
Okay.
There have been all these other games,
but, you know, like,
that have art styles.
Warcraft 3 had, you know, it was kind of a slower pace, you know, like it wasn't like there wasn't really a PvP feel to it.
In Dota, in the Dota map, there is. I mean, that's the way Dota plays like Dota has played for, all these MOBA games play like Dota plays, and it's a pretty fast paced thing, it's this multiplayer battle arena. You control a single hero, and you're trying to get kills on the opposing team. You're building up gold that you're using to buy equipment and additional skills and upgrades and that sort of stuff. And then everything is reset at the beginning of every match. So there's no persistence in your character progression between matches.
Oh, okay.
I haven't dug deep into Heroes of the Storm specifically, but looking at the gameplay itself, from the video they put out, the gameplay looks very similar to these other MOBA games that we've seen, and that's probably for the best, because these games, these games are similar to the point where they all use essentially the same map.
Oh, well, see, this one doesn't do that. I mean, they have multiple maps and arenas and battlegrounds.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see if they are trying to differentiate themselves a bit. Because so far, I mean, the recipe for success in this type of game has been you make a game that is pretty much Dota. That uses the same type of map with three lanes, one going through the center and two going up the sides, and a river going through the center and that sort of stuff. So
this definitely had a different look and feel to it, in my opinion. But like I said, I'm not up on Dota. So I like the idea, though, of having just like a brawler like that. But I also like that they kind of brought in some of the PvP battleground from World of Warcraft type stuff to them, or you've got certain objectives that help you and your team.
Yeah, see, that is I mean, so typically in MOBA games it's destroying towers and that's all there is. So if they're putting in other objectives, that is kind of unique. So
I think, they don't make a lot of bad games. So I think this will be definitely worth a watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, right. It's even if they are just making another MOBA, the fact that Blizzard is making it means that it will probably be of a quality that you don't necessarily see in the other ones.
The whole tie-in for like bringing in people from other games definitely reminded me of Super Smash Brothers Melee, just because you've got all the Nintendo heroes and from across like a wide variety of games in that case, but it was always a lot of fun. And
right,
I don't know that I had like exceptional. I didn't like really spend a whole lot of time on Smash Brothers, but if someone wanted to play it, I wouldn't say no. You know what I mean? Like it definitely had a it didn't require the same investment, say that doing a an arena team or playing World of Warcraft would entail. So I like that aspect. I think it'll be cool. I want to get down that beta.
Totally.
Like I filled out the little thing and I said, yes, I'm interested. So hopefully I'll get to play it.
Cool. All right. Well, that'll probably do it for this episode of the Hell Yeah Show. If you want to contact us, you can do so at show@hellyeah.com. You can also visit us online and see some show notes at show.hellyeah.com.
You can reach us on the Twitter machine, twitter.com/hellyeahshow. Send us a tweet at hellyeahshow. And you can also find us on app.net at hellyeah and on Google Plus, hellyeahshow.
All right. Very good. With that, we will see you in about 2 weeks.
Happy birthday, Casbah.